You. In the book of 2 Kings, in chapter 4, just before the part that Julie read for us, we find this story. There was a woman in a desperate situation. Her husband was dead, and she was in debt. And the debtor was now on his way to collect. But because she was unable to pay, he would take her two sons as slaves. When the prophet Elisha heard this, he said, "Maybe there's something I can do to help." He asked her, "What do you have in your house? What are your resources? What do we have to work with?" All that she had of any kind of value at all was a little bottle of olive oil. Okay, that's not a lot to work with. Ask your neighbors for their empty jars. Elisha told her, there are some more resources there in your community. And once you've borrowed as many as you can, go home and shut the door behind you and your sons. Then begin filling the jars with oil and set each one aside as you fill it. Have you seen the reality TV show Queer Eye yet? I'm totally obsessed with it. In each episode, a team of five professionals who identify as gay or queer, they call themselves the Fab Five, swoop into the life of a nominated individual who may be in some sort of crisis or who needs help to get ahead in their career or life. It's a makeover, kind of, but it's way more than a makeover. The five help with nutrition, they help with style, with personal care, they help pursue health and medical care if needed, they help individuals kind of look into their social anxieties. Sometimes they help with counseling. Sometimes they help someone get a business set up or just reorganize their home in a way that's functional. Sometimes helping the individuals means reconnecting them to their community. So many things happen, and so many happy tears. It's spectacular. It's amazing. At the end of the show, it's full of celebration, and it's exciting, and it pulls at all of the heartstrings. This is what happens, I think, in the story of the woman with the oil. She's in a desperate situation, and Elisha, the Fab One, swoops in and helps her move forward and change her life. Some oil, okay. What else? Neighbors with jars, okay. Here's what we're going to do. Go home, shut the door, keep you and yourself and your son safe. Then begin filling the jars with oil and set each one aside as you fill it. The woman listens to him, and once inside her home, she has her son bring the jars and she begins to fill them. One, two, three, 10, 11, 12, 20, 21. Miraculously, she keeps filling jars with her little bit of oil. At last, she says, "Bring me another jar." "We don't have any more," one son answers. At this point, the oil stops flowing from the small bottle. This is what happens on Queer Eye as well. They figure out the resources that the person has, they figure out who their community is, what they have available to them, and then find ways to help that person build on those things. I'm not sure if they're miracle workers, but through the magic of TV, it sure seems like it sometimes. Elisha told the woman, "Sell the oil and use part of the money to pay for what you owe the man. You and your sons can live on what is left." It's amazing. It's miraculous. It's fabulous. It's spectacular. And this moment that's so amazing is what Naaman wants too. Naaman the Aramean is a great man, highly respected, in high favor with his master, the king of Aram. He is a commander of his country's army, glorious and victorious in battle. And or but, Naaman suffers from leprosy. What kind of a leprosy, we're not told. I know that I imagine right away something very terrible, and perhaps it was. There's a disease that sometimes we understand to be that spoken of in the scriptures as leprosy. Today we call it Hansen's disease, and it is disfiguring and debilitating. But it could also be a number of other skin conditions. Regardless, it's enough of a problem that Naaman needs a cure and is willing to go to great lengths to get it. But the story that Julie just read for us isn't just the story of Naaman. It's also the story of a little girl. We don't know her name. She's not in the story very long. We do know that she was taken captive in an Aramean raid, and we know that she is from the land of Israel. We also know that she serves Naaman's wife. She's the one who gets the first words in the story. I wish that my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria. Then he would cure him of his leprosy. So it's clear how the story is set up for us. The great and valiant Naaman serves the king of a victorious nation. A small, one translation says little, nameless, and disempowered girl serves his wife. But this is the one, she's the one who is providing the solution and speaking into the central problem, Naaman's leprosy. And here's the shocking thing. Naaman listens to her. Not only does he listen to her, but he acts on what she says and goes to his own master, the king, and tells him what the little girl has said. Apparently, there's this guy who can do spectacular things, change his life. It's amazing. At least that's what this little girl from the land of Israel said. I want to go see him. The king says, oh, yeah, go. And I'm going to send along a letter nominating you because you totally deserve this, Naaman. You're the best. We're all so proud of you. Go with my blessing. By the way, if anyone wants to nominate me for Queer Eye, I am completely on board with that. Even if it means I can't wear all black or my comfy sandals anymore. So Naaman departed and took tons of silver and gold with him, along with 10 changes of clothes, and he had the king's letter in hand. Naaman went to the king of Israel first, but when this king read the letter, he panicked. Aram has been attacking them, raiding them, taking their people as slaves. Aram was the more powerful nation. Am I God? He cries out, tearing his clothes. To kill and make alive that this man is sending word to me to cure a man of his leprosy? He must be trying to pick a fight. But this is where Elisha shows up. Don't panic. There's been a mix-up. The letter was meant for me. People are writing to me like this all the time. Just send the man along to me so that he may learn that there is a prophet in Israel, so that he may learn that God is still speaking in Israel. So Naaman came with his horse and chariot, silver, gold, and clothing, and stopped in front of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, go, wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored, and you shall be clean. Elisha didn't even come down. There were no magic hands. There was no spectacle. There was no grand entrance and healing. It didn't even make it to air. Naaman came for the full treatment, a makeover, a cure, gushes of praise and encouragement, maybe some empowering words for going forward. What he got was a prescription for polysporin and was sent on his way. And he got mad. And he went away saying, I thought that for me, he would surely come out. I thought that he would call on the name of the Lord his God and would wave his hands over the spot and cure the leprosy. I could have stayed home and had a bath in our own rivers. Why should I have to do it here? He turned and stomped away in rage. This would have been a much different story, though, and a story that's certainly familiar. If Naaman had responded to the young girl's words with a pat on the head and a, "That's a nice idea, dear," and proceeded to go his own way. We're set up to be surprised that so great a man would listen and act on the words of a seemingly unimportant girl. But Naaman did listen, and good for him, showing that there's some sort of openness about him. But Elisha's actions, they were a bit much. "Doesn't he know who I am? Doesn't he know how important I am? Doesn't he even want to talk to me?" Naaman is offended. But I wonder if it's even more than that. I think he might be hurt. Because it does hurt when we don't feel special or important or heard or known. And Naaman, like many of us, wants to be known. So now the story is set up for us to pay attention again. Naaman stomps away enraged and angry and offended. And his servants come up to him and say, "Father, if the prophet had commanded you to do something difficult, would you not have done it? He hasn't asked for much. Just wash and be clean. Why not just do that?" And Naaman listens to his servants again. This time, his servants have completely called him out on his fit. But he listens to them. I know that there's never just one way to understand the story, but when I read this one, I really think that it's all about listening and acting. At first glance, the problem is Naaman's skin disease. But we look again and find Naaman saying, "I thought that for me he would come out. I thought he would care about who I am. I thought he would want to know me." Naaman is searching for recognition, for the peace that comes from knowing he is important and that he is deserving. Instead, he's called to listen to those who seem to be less important, who seem to be without power. God is speaking, but it's not through the mighty and the highly respected and highly favored. It's through a little girl, a weaker nation, nameless servants. This sounds familiar to me. It sounds like the kind of God who shows up to the shepherd, to the captives, to children and to ones deemed weak, to women in desperate situations, to women at all, to stables and fishing villages, to those who have been called unclean. It sounds like the kind of God who declares a different kind of kingdom, one of good news to the poor, release to captives, healing, new understanding, and freedom to the oppressed. To the woman with only a little bit of oil, and again, God is speaking through those who seem to be ordinary. Paul Salopek is a reporter for National Geographic, and he's currently walking around the world, actually walking around the world. His journey began in 2013, and when he completes it, he thought it would take 7 years. Now he's quite sure it will take longer. But when he completes it, he will have walked close to 34,000 kilometers. Some of you have followed this, I'm sure. He began his journey in Ethiopia, right at the site of one of the world's oldest human fossil sites. He has walked through Djibouti, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, the West Bank, Israel, Cyprus, Turkey, Georgia, Azerbaijan, boated across the Caspian Sea, then on to Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, forgive me for the ones I'm getting wrong, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and he's currently moving through India. I think it's fascinating. I think it's so interesting that he's taking this journey and a huge commitment. As he goes, he's fallen into a pattern of walking for some days and then taking a few days for rest. And as he walks, people join him and walk alongside him. He's often invited into their homes, and he listens to story upon story. When he rests, he reflects and writes down what he has heard. In a recent interview on The Current, on CBC's The Current, Salopek reflected that there's a lot of bad news, because bad news attracts our attention. It's human nature. And then he spoke of walking through difficult places, through war zones, and finding beauty and light-filled aspects of human nature in those places. Walking through the West Bank, he says, was like an extended picnic. Certainly, he encountered flashpoints of human anger and violence, but it was also shockingly normal, with people going to work, running errands, going out for lunch, and taking kids to the park. He also spoke of listening to the issues and the concerns that flow from one country to another as he walks. And interestingly and sadly, one of the most universal injustices that he's encountered over the 7 years has been inequality between genders. And that intersects with many other inequalities, but that's the one he sees that just continues and continues. He's learned to listen in a new way. He's found a way of listening to what people are saying, listening not necessarily to the loud voices that we hear so often, but listening to the person beside him, walking along with him. So we can't take it for granted that the one who was given the first words in Naaman's story is a little girl. We are invited and called to pay attention to God speaking through her. But I wonder who else does this story invite us to listen to? And whose words are we called to act on? How might we learn to listen slowly and actively, paying attention to those who walk beside us? Jesus sent his disciples out to proclaim that the kingdom of God has come near. Who is declaring that today? How are we being called to listen? What are we being invited to know? Salopek points out that bad news attracts our attention. And some voices, positive and negative, are so easy to hear. If you have ever led a group or any kind of meeting, you know this. Critical voices can seem the loudest. Those with complaints, the squeaky wheel, definitely and importantly, often gets heard. Writers and storytellers know that what is frightening is super interesting, too. We are also well-tuned to listen to folks like Naaman, I think. Naaman, who's likable. Naaman, who has a high social currency. And we listen to our own voices. But so often it can be the negative voice within us that is heard. Are we listening to that voice of love within us? There's so many things that assault us, I guess, or that we're called to pay attention to. But where is God speaking? Naaman went down and immersed himself 7 times in the Jordan, just as Elisha, the man of God, said. His flesh was restored like the flesh of a young boy, and he was clean. Then he returned to Elisha, he and all his company. He came and stood before him and said, "Now I know that there is no God in all the earth except in Israel." Naaman, whose currency was recognition, whose deep need was to be known, returns from the river transformed and having met God. His skin is restored, yes, but so is his heart. He has come close to God. He has discovered the kingdom through the words of a little girl, the challenge of his servants, and also through the simple act of letting go of control. And so we are invited to wonder, to imagine, where might God be speaking now?